Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Arun Vanagopal. For nearly 100 years, the U.S. Border Patrol has been tasked with catching migrants attempting to cross into the United States. The agency, which operates under the Department of Homeland Security, can search and detain people without a warrant if they suspect someone is undocumented or is smuggling contraband.
The Border Patrol for quite a while now has operated with near impunity.
That's Greg Grandin, a history professor at Yale University and author of The End of the Myth, From the Frontier to the Border Wall in the Mind of America. Despite this lack of scrutiny, the agency has for decades operated a program called the Border Patrol Explorers, which teaches teenagers age 14 to 18 to carry out Border Patrol enforcement work. Morley Music, a freelance reporter, recently wrote a feature story for The Nation about the training program, raising questions about the tactics and philosophy underlying the Explorers program. I sat down with Greg and Morley to discuss this program and the broader history of the biggest law enforcement agency in the country. I began by asking Morley where this program takes place.
This happens in border communities, both along the southern and northern border. So Arizona, Texas, California, also Detroit, Maine, and Washington.
So there's a wide range of activities that these teenagers sort of participate in. Can you give me a sense of some of them?
So because the work, you know, consists of basically learning how to be an agent, they role play various scenarios that agents might encounter. One of these is a high-risk vehicle stop, which would be stopping a car on a highway. And then the others are apprehending people crossing through the desert. So some of the situations consist of splitting the kids into agents and role play undocumented people. And they tell the kids, okay, you know, you guys are going to go off and hide, and the agents are going to go track down your footprints and catch you, and this time there's going to be an altercation, or this time there won't be, or this time you guys are going to fire at the agents, or this time they'll fire at you.
And strikingly, many of these young people who are joining this program are themselves the sons and daughters of immigrants, including undocumented immigrants, correct?
That's right, yeah.
Greg, part of the experience for these young men and women involves learning the history of the Border Patrol. I'm curious, if you were their instructor, what would you be telling them about that history?
The Border Patrol was created in 1924. And prior to that, the border was more or less open. The agency was very small at first. It just had a few hundred agents. But it quickly acquired a reputation for brutality. In many ways, the Border Patrol was compensation. 1924 was also the year that the U.S. Congress passed the famous Immigration Act, which put quotas on basically lowered immigration from Asia to zero and gave privilege to immigrants from Northern Europe, from Protestant Europe. But Mexico was exempt. Mexico had no quotas because the large ranches and the miners, the corporations on the border wanted cheap labor. So in some ways, the Border Patrol was compensation to the nativists who felt that they didn't get what they wanted with that immigration law when it came to Mexico and when it came to Latin America.
So how has the agency changed in the nearly 100 years since it was created?
Well, it grew quickly, and there was a qualitative leap. In the 1930s, there was a big push for deportations, as there was in the 1950s. It's larger than all other federal agencies put together, and it's one of the most well-funded. So it's grown exponentially over the last years at these key moments, the 1930s, the 1950s, and then again in the 1990s.
To your knowledge, has it had an active recruitment effort among young people, such as the ones that Morley has reported on?
No, that Morley story to me was eye-opening. It was chilling.
And why is that?
I think it speaks to the larger militarization of the country. And when you think about other law enforcement agencies, you think about the CIA or the FBI, they all had moments of reckoning at different times, mostly in the 1970s, 1980s, when they had to deal with acknowledging abusive patterns of repression of people of color and social movements. For the most part, the Border Patrol has operated without any accountability. Its pattern of abuse has been documented by reporters, but for the most part, it's largely been held unaccountable. And so when you see this recruitment and the sensationalizing of interdiction of human beings, particularly when one thinks of how many people have died crossing the desert trying to get in the United States, then nobody knows the number, but some have calculated about 10,000 people have died since the 1990s alone.
Morley, you point out that many other sort of agencies, police departments and the like, do have, say, cadet programs. So what's so special or different about the Border Patrol Explorers?
I think what's special about it is just the nature of the work. Police and military explorer programs, of which there are many, the work is about arresting immigrants crossing through the desert, and the kind of training that the explorers receive is tuned to the geography of the region that they're in. So I talked to some kids who were taken by their agents to the Rio Grande River, where the agents pointed out men who they alleged were pretending to fish but were really scouts for the cartel. And in Maine, the kids, you know, were taken around in radar boats.
Now, you said this is happening along the border, both the southern and northern border. Is there a sense of the scale of this?
Yeah, it's as of 2018, I think there are 890 kids in the program. They're mostly in Arizona and Texas, but also in California.
So walk us through what communities along the border are like and what the general makeup of the Border Patrol Explorer program, what it looks like.
I was reporting in Arizona and a little bit in Texas, and the communities I was in, Ajo, Douglas, and Laredo, are primarily Hispanic. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that, but one of them is that sometimes people move down there because it's the easiest way to be close to relatives that are in Mexico. Or say if you've had a parent or someone else who's been deported, it's a way to sort of keep your family together as you can move to a town like Douglas and just kind of drive across every day or every week. So just sort of reflecting the makeup of the communities, the Border Patrol Explorers along the southern border is majority Hispanic.
Did you sense any sort of ambivalence, or were these kids, these teenagers, pretty excited or gung-ho about participating in these kinds of exercises?
For the most part, they're excited, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact that the exercises are actually seem kind of fun. The kids sort of get to play cops and robbers and run around with fake guns and that kind of thing. I did talk to one graduate of the Explorers who had nothing but good things to say about the program itself, but had opted not to join the Border Patrol and instead was working within the Sheriff's Department in Douglas, Arizona. But even his effort at sort of avoiding what I think he considered some of the more unsavory sides of Border Patrol work hadn't really succeeded, because he was working in the jail, which was used as a holding center for immigrants. A lot of kids who join the program also don't explicitly aim at joining the Border Patrol. A lot of them do it because the training is sort of viewed as good prep for the military, which in itself raises some questions.
And certainly its recruitment efforts feel similar to the kinds of, trailers we see for the military, the movie trailers you might see sitting down at a movie in a movie theater or watching on TV. I want to play a clip for you of a video similar to one that you mentioned in your reporting. Here's an ad for the Chandler Tactical Competition, which features different youth law enforcement groups, including the Border Patrol Explorers. This ad is layered with clips from a Mission Impossible movie. In this video, you see a lot of kids. Some of them are brown, presumably Latinx kids, running around with fake guns.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
All right, guys, go.
It's all irrelevant.
Hey, don't you make it,
So you see all these young people sort of like bursting into rooms where they're sort of like taking down, presumably, an immigrant. It feels very, I guess you could say, exciting if you're into that kind of a thing. You are familiar with this competition. What can you tell us about this and what it says about the broader philosophy of the program?
Well, the competitions are run in these sort of mock war zone like spaces in Chandler, Arizona, which I believe they also use to train local law enforcement. And they include a series of events that are supposed to be, I guess, the kind of things that they'll encounter in law enforcement, although they have a decidedly warlike tinge. So there's saving hostages, there's marijuana field raid competitions, there's, I guess, capturing terrorists. I think since 9/11, this has become a bigger part of Explorer curriculums is counterterrorism kind of stuff. I think the competitions sort of deal in a few dangerous insinuations. The first being just that law enforcement work can in any way be likened to a competition. I really don't think that's the sort of right suggestion, however lighthearted it might be. The second is that it is law enforcement work is like military work, is interchangeable sort of preparation, that the kids are moving in war zones and the villains, you know, wear sort of Arab, they wear keffiyehs and they diffuse bombs with, where in an earlier trailer you can see the kids diffusing a bomb with a cell phone call written in Arabic. There's strong suggestions in these photographs that the kids are moving through sort of, you know, Middle East spaces, but they're domestic, you know, border patrol explorers. So the suggestion is, okay, border enforcement is somehow like wars in the Middle East, and then wars in the Middle East are like Bond movies or Mission Impossible.
Or taking down the terrorist.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Greg.
I was just going to say the irony of this, of course, is that more than any other law enforcement agency, the Border Patrolling has been subject to high-tech technology, the deployment of high-tech sensors and surveillance that has actually rendered the actual work of the Border Patrol quite mundane. So there's a real dissonance between the action of that recruitment clip and what is the everyday experience of Border Patrolling. Just to go back to the desert scene, you know, that's the crossing through the desert is a relatively new phenomenon, just a couple of decades old. Prior to the 1990s, the vast majority of migrants who crossed back and forth did cross relatively safe urban crossings in El Paso and Brownsville. It was during the Clinton administration that they began to militarize all of those relatively safe crossing and forcing migrants out into the desert. And they intentionally did this as a deterrent. They talked about geography would slow down migration. That's not what happened. What happened was that it stopped a pattern of being able to go back and forth and do seasonal migration work. And once you got into the United States, you stayed here because the cost of crossing was so high. But the result of it was just to create an incredibly onerous trek through some of the most dangerous and deadly terrain in the hemisphere in the world. And it is very warlike. And the other thing that I would say is that it's well documented. You know, the groups like No More Death have documented the degrees in which the Border Patrol actually sabotage attempts to do humanitarian work for the migrants. They puncture water bottles. They destroy food left out to help migrants. So there is this, I know there is this recruitment notion that they're doing humanitarian work, and in some ways that's how the dissonance is worked out among Latinos who join the Border Patrol. But the fact of the matter is that they often are quite, you know, there is this heritage of brutality that has carried forth directed at migrants. And this kind of conflation of foreign war and border patrolling continues that brutality, and it's a form of terrorism.
Greg, there's an excerpt in Morley's piece where he asks someone who participates in the program, he says why he continues to participate in it. Presumably this is border patrol explorers, but and the answer, he says, is money. He replied, money, money, money. Ajo's median household income is just over $33,000, and just under a third of its residents live below the federal poverty line. When the highest paying jobs in town are in law enforcement, working for Border Patrol makes economic sense. So we're looking at really a pipeline of young brown people who are in ways being drawn to something where they'll be policing their own communities. Am I right?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And it is a kind of pipeline of desperation. I mean, look, the first three fatalities in the war in Iraq from the U.S. were two undocumented Mexicans and an undocumented Guatemalan. So there's ways in which, you know, there's this cycle of desperation that has wheels within wheels. It has to do with economic policy in Central America and Mexico, which creates the conditions of desperation that forces the migration. It has to do with the militarization of the border, which makes it incredibly perilous, and then it has to do with the desperation that once people are here, one of the only growth industries for some of migrants is law enforcement or the military.
I do want to add an important caveat is that sometimes Mexican Border Patrol agents or just descendants of Mexican immigrants along the border really don't identify with the most recent wave of immigrants, and that I had sort of presupposed that as a Mexican immigrant, you would, you know, feel some solidarity with the more recent waves of crossing. But sometimes there's really strong efforts to, say, distance yourself from Guatemalans or Salvadorians.
Morley Music is a freelance reporter, and Greg Grandin is a history professor at Yale University and author of The End of the Myth, From the Frontier to the Border Wall in the Mind of America. Morley and Greg, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.